So tonight we conclude our 5-week, which has actually been 6 weeks, study on the history of the biblical church. And we are going to spend the last week talking about the prison epistles. Now, typically, what I do is I will do a little PowerPoint magic and reveal things point by point to you as we work our way through, but we are covering 4 different epistles tonight, and so I am going to move at breakneck speed and give it to you all at once. So, get ready. Let us pray. Kevin and I really need to go on tour together. We'd make a great team. All right, so slide 3. All right, so when we talk about the prison epistles, what we're typically talking about is Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, as well as the epistle to Philemon. Okay, these are what are called the prison epistles. Okay, now Philemon is the one that's at the pretty much. No, technically it would be Philemon, and it would be a hard E because it is the eta. Is that right, Brandon? Is that an eta? And it's pronounced as a hard E, like an A, like the A. So it'd be Philemon, but nobody that's English pronounces it like that. But it'd be like, "Ooh, Lord, I want a Philemon." But I am positive about Ephesians, Philippians, and Colossians. Okay? So, by the way, the best mnemonic ever for remembering the order of these, you have to realize that Galatians comes first, but it's not one of the prison epistles, is the mnemonic device, Gentiles eat pork chops. Because, of course, Jews don't. Gentiles eat pork chops. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians. You'll never forget that one, okay? Gentiles eat pork chops because Jews don't. Okay. So these are called the prison epistles because in each and every one of them, there's a reference to Paul either being in prison or to being in chains. This is not metaphorical. This is not, oh, the chains of my sin. Oh, my guilt has me in chains. No, he's held captive. He's actually held captive, and the references are there. We have Ephesians 3:1, 4:1, and 6:20, Philippians 1:7 and 13, Colossians 4:10 and 18. However you want to call that guy, I'm calling him Philemon or Philemon. Philemon 1:9 and 10. Again, Philemon has no chapters. Those are just verses because it is the smallest book of the New Testament. No chapters, just verses. Okay? We're going to talk about several places today, but we're only going to have one map. Okay? So it's the map, it's the map, it's the map. People with kids get that one. All right, so you can see we've already talked about Thessalonica up sort of northern Macedonia and Philippi, right? We've talked about Paul's journeys there before. Oh, thank you, Kevin. That's very clever. Follow the bouncing arrow. Now, if we go down the coast of Asia Minor to the bottom red dot there, there we have Ephesus. We know that Paul spent 3 years in Ephesus. It was one of the major capitals in Asia, very important city. If we go straight east of Ephesus, we find Laodicea and Colossae. One of the important things about Colossae, well, we'll get there later, but that's where we got the letter to the Colossians. All right, so, and really the only one that we really want to cover other than Colossae is the westernmost city, Nicopolis. The westernmost yellow dot, a little further north. There you go. That's the other one. We'll talk about that one later. There you go. All right, so. All right, let's talk about the epistle to the Philippians first. Again, we're talking about the background here because we're looking for clues to history, okay? Which means we're not really talking about the incredible theological content or the powerful message that he says and really great quotes and powerful scriptures. We're looking for what your English teacher would have said is context clues, okay? Things that he says that give us hints to the background, that tells us what's going on here, that gives us an idea of what was going on in the historical church. Okay? So we find things like St. Paul wrote it along with St. Timothy. If you look at the very first verse, it says, I, Paul, with Timothy. Okay? Remember, we found this when we looked at 1 and 2 Corinthians, that they have, that many of these epistles actually have co-authors. It's not just Paul wrote this. There are other people who he lists as co-authors. All right, so the Epistle to the Philippians lists Paul, or I'm sorry, lists Timothy as an author. All right, the second point is that he hopes to send Timothy along with, you got to love this name, Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus. At least you didn't have to say that one. And the thing about Epaphroditus is that he had been very, very ill, almost to the point of death, and had recovered. Now, Epaphroditus had been from the city of Philippi, okay? And the Philippians had heard that he was ill. They were very concerned about him, and his recovery had been a source of great joy to them. And then, at the end of the letter, Paul says something. He says, essentially, Paul, again, with the great names, you got to love the Greeks, Euodia and Syntyche, we'll go with that one, to resolve their disagreements. Basically, I entreat Euodia and Syntyche to come to agreement in the Lord. Basically, figure out what's wrong with you two and put it aside and come to agreements. There had been some division that they had, and these two ladies were fussing and a-fighting. And he says, cut that nonsense out. Okay? Yeah, gotta work the pork chops. Okay? Resolve their disagreements, and he also encourages Clement, who has been very helpful to him. Okay? So, what we have here is a letter that is very personal. Right? This is a letter where he is thrilled about these people because he's had a friend who has been on death's door, who has miraculously recovered, and he's sending them back full of joy because they're going to receive this guy who they thought was dead, and he is alive. And he says, by the way, tell this person that they need to behave themselves, this person they need to get together, and this person I said hi because they were really a blessing to me. Remember, he had a tremendous ministry in Philippi. Philippi was always a great city to him, so it makes sense that he sends this warm greeting to them. Okay? Let's talk about Colossae. Paul never visited Colossae. We have no record of Paul ever hitting this town on his visits. And in fact, in chapter 2, verse 1 of his letter to the Colossians, he says, I've never seen you face to face. Okay? Again, he co-writes this letter with Timothy, and he sends it via your favorite guy, which we'll say is probably Tychicus. Okay? You gotta love these names. Yeah. Tychicus. It's probably Tychicus. And, okay, Ty. And this other guy who's going to be very important later on, Onesimus. So he probably sent these two guys because he got tired of trying to pronounce their names. Okay? It's like, yo, onesie, go carry this off. Okay? Now, Ty, onesie, take this letter to Colossae. Okay? Now, this is really fascinating because he says at the end of the letter, when you're done, make sure that you read this letter to the church and then have it read in Laodicea and have the letter that was read that I sent to Laodicea read in your church. Now, this doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's a tremendously big deal to church historians because it says that during his lifetime, his letters were being read in churches as something that was beginning to take shape as like a scriptural reading. Right? He was saying, in your church, when they gather together, read my letters. Okay? This is a very early form of what we do in church today. And it was happening during his lifetime, which is mind-blowing for historians. Okay? And then he also has very specific instructions for Archippus. Again, with these names. His Archippus. It is, well, it's in Colossians verse chapter 4, verse 17. But what he says, and say to Archippus, take heed of the ministry which you have received in the Lord, that you may fulfill it. Okay? Take heed of the ministry that you have received in the Lord, that you may fulfill it. All right? So, again, hey, I'm sending this letter via Onesimus and Tychicus. I've co-written it with Timothy. Do this thing here, do this thing here. Switch these letters out in the church of Laodicea and Colossae, which, by the way, you know, when my wife and I got married, we honeymooned in this incredibly teensy tiny little town. And when we tried to find anything nearby, we had to go to this place called Elizabethton. And Elizabethton was near this other city, which was near Johnson City. And you put these three places together and you're like, where are we? And they said, you're in the Tri-City area. Oh, so none of these cities is big enough to have its own metropolitan area, huh? Yeah, so you put the three of them together and they had one big region that they called like the Tri-City area. Well, Laodicea, Colossae, and Hierapolis were three cities that were really kind of small, but you put three of them together and they formed like the Tri-City area in the Lycus Valley, which is on the Meander River. The only thing that's really amusing about the Meander River is that it meanders, which is why we call it meandering now, because this river does this thing all the way to its end. Okay? All right, so let's talk about Philemon or Philemon or whatever we want to call him. We'll call him Phil. Okay, so this is the only prison epistle that's written to a person. Okay? This is not to a city. This is not to a region like Galatians. This is not to a church. This is to Phil. Whatever his name is. Again, it's co-authored with Timothy. It addresses a very specific situation. Onesimus, onesie, is a runaway slave. Philemon is a slave owner who owned Onesimus, and Onesimus has run away. And he made it to Paul and is like, Paul, I ran away, and now I'm here to serve you. And Paul says, well, that'll never do. You're a criminal. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to send you back, which, by the way, is punishable by death. I'm going to send you back with this letter. Don't worry, I got this. And the letter essentially says, more or less, paraphrasing greatly, if you love me and you love the Lord, release this man, make him your brother, because he's really useful to me. By the way, Onesimus means essentially useful. Okay? So that's the situation that this is addressing. Okay? Basically, Onesimus goes back to Philemon with this letter going, hi, I know that you can kill me because I'm a runaway slave, but I got this letter from Paul. You should really read it first. Okay? And if you ever want to see Paul at his rhetorical best, there is no way that Philemon could have done anything but what Paul said. Because when you read it, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, go, just quickly. All right, so the other thing is, it's not written just to Philemon, it's also written to Philemon, our beloved and fellow worker, and Apphia, our sister, and Archippus, our fellow soldier, and the church in your house. Okay? This is one of those things that is also really fascinating. Okay? So all you moms will know that when you send out Christmas cards, you don't sign them with your name. Okay? You sign them your husband's name, your name, and your children's name. Because your husband's handwriting is atrocious, and your children don't bother with such things. Right? And so, when the Christmas cards ever went out from my parents' home, it was always signed Greg, Diane, and Scott. Okay? So, the most logical and best conclusion about this is that Philemon was married to Apphia and that their son was Archippus, who was a fellow soldier. The only other time that the fellow soldier term is used when reference to Epaphroditus, the guy who got sick and was healed from Philippi. Okay? And Archippus is that guy who has the ministry that was entrusted to him. Okay? So the conclusion here, and I will admit that I like this, because it suits me, and so I'm projecting a little, but it does make total sense. It makes sense that Philemon and Apphia are a wealthy married couple whose son is clergy in Colossae, and that their house is big enough that it hosts the church, but Philemon is not clergy. Archippus is clergy. He would be one of the priests in Colossae, okay? And I say that it's Colossae because if you compare the end of Colossians to the end of Philemon, they mention all of the same people. You see that it mentions Luke, Demas, Aristarchus, everybody that we read about today, you get hearing again. You get Mark, all of them are mentioned, and they're mentioned in Colossians, and they're mentioned at the end of Philemon. Total consistency. What probably happened was, remember how it said that Tychicus and Onesimus were going to carry the letter? Well, Onesimus probably carried the letter to Philemon at the same time. Okay? Which might have made things a little awkward. Okay? But now let's talk about the epistle to the Ephesians, because this is kind of the one of the things is not like the other letters. First, it's not co-authored with Timothy. It's the first one that says, I, Paul, period. Now Paul goes on to describe himself, but it doesn't say Paul and Timothy, Paul and Sosthenes, Paul and anybody else. It's just I, Paul, period. There's kind of this non-specific kind of general feel to it. It doesn't address any specific feel or any specific issue. There's no, Syntyche and Euodia, you've got this problem. Thank God Epaphroditus is feeling better. There's nothing like that. There's no real references to any people in it. It's really surprising considering he spent 3 years in Ephesus. There's only one person that's mentioned by name in it, and that's our old friend Tychicus. Okay? And it says that he will be carrying it. Okay? The conclusion that we draw from this was probably meant to be what's referred to as an encyclical letter, that he sent it to them with the intention that they would do what the Colossians and the Laodiceans were going to do, which is pass it around. Okay? Like, hey, buddies, I know that we had this long 3-year relationship, but I also know that you're the capital of Asia, so the Roman province of Asia, that is, which is what we'd call Turkey. But now I want you to take this letter and take it to places like Pergamum, Thyatira, Smyrna, all those places that we read about, and you know, the seven churches of Asia in John's book of Revelation. Carry it to these places and read it there. Okay? And that's what we mean by when we say it's encyclical. It has a cyclical kind of chain lettery kind of thing, except without the, if you don't do this, you're going to get 7 years of bad luck. All right, so what about this Tychicus dude? Who is this guy? Well, he's actually in the New Testament quite a bit. We see him pop up in kind of obscure places frequently. Okay, he's kind of like that bizarre cameo that happens a lot, and you don't realize it until like later. But so he's in Acts. Remember when we've talked about it repeatedly, there's that part of the third missionary journey that covers a whole lot of ground, and it's only like four verses, but it covers like a couple hundred miles and should have taken a long time, but it's very, very brief, and it lists all these people. Well, Tychicus is one of those people who's mentioned there, okay? And it tells us that he was an Asian who was with Paul on the third missionary journey. We know from Colossians that he carried the letter to the Colossians, and that this is really interesting as well. And if you were paying real close attention to Casey, it was one of the last things he said in the epistle today. Very late in his life, Paul sent him to Ephesus. Our reading today was from 2 Timothy, which was probably the very last thing that Paul wrote before he was executed. 2 Timothy was probably what we would consider like Paul's last will and testament, okay? And he said, I'm going to send this to you. I'm sending Tychicus to Ephesus, okay? And the other interesting thing is that the epistle to Titus says that either he or Artemis would have carried the epistle to Titus. Okay, so he pops up all over the place. And this is really interesting. We'll put these pieces together a little later. So, that leaves us the question of when and where were these epistles written? Which is the kind of question we've been dealing with the previous 4 weeks. So, Philippians 1:13 refers to the imperial palace or the imperial household or the imperial guard. In the Greek, the word is praetorio, okay? Because of this, most people assume, and it's not necessarily a bad assumption because there's some good evidence to suggest it, that this was in Rome. Make some comment about Caesar's household. It makes sense that they would be written in Rome. But Caesar had households all over the ancient world. And there were actually praetorian households, praetorian guard stations in Ephesus, in Rome, and in Caesarea. So it could conceivably have been written from any one of those places. So let's go a little further on this. So what do we know about the epistles? Well, Paul was in prison when he wrote them. He might die among the Praetorian Guard, some of whom were Christian, but he hoped he would be released. Timothy was with him, question mark on that one, we'll get back to that, and he had communications with the cities beyond just the epistles. Okay, we know that the Philippians knew that Epaphroditus was sick. We know that Onesimus left Colossae, ran away, and came to him, and was ultimately sent back. Okay, so we know that there was two-way communications other than just the epistles. Okay? Now, these four things give us a lot to go on. So, could it have been written from Caesarea? Well, we know that he was held in prison there for 2 years. We see that in Acts 23:33 through 26:32. However, there's no evidence that Timothy was ever in Jerusalem or Caesarea with him. Last we hear, he stops in Troas and doesn't go with them any further. As far as we know, he stayed in Asia, did not go with them. There's no other suggestion that he was with them in Rome, that he was along with them. As far as we know, he stayed in Asia when Paul went on to the Holy Land, and he wasn't there. He couldn't have co-authored with him. Additionally, and this is the one that I think is really significant, Philippi was like 1,000 miles by land or sea from Caesarea. So back and forth communication would have been really difficult. Okay, the idea of them finding out somebody was sick and then getting back and all of that, it's really, really challenging. All right, so what about Rome? Okay, we know he was held in Rome for at least 2 years. We see that in Acts 28:30. But again, there's no evidence that Timothy was ever in Rome. Okay, as far as we know, he stayed in Asia. But again, from Philippi to Rome would be about 900 miles, a little shorter, but still an insanely long distance. So what about Ephesus? Well, while St. Paul was in Ephesus for 3 years, there's no record of him being imprisoned, specifically. However, we see in the Corinthian correspondences, 1 and 2 Corinthians, he mentions fighting wild beasts and a death sentence that he narrowly escaped. And that's 1 Corinthians 15:32 and 2 Corinthians 1:8 through 10. Okay? So, was that when he was in Ephesus? Well, it's possible. St. Paul also writes of more imprisonments in 2 Corinthians 6:5 and 11:23, which probably was written from Ephesus, or at least maybe Macedonia after he had gotten out of Ephesus. So it could have been that he was in prison there, although Luke never tells us specifically that he was in prison there. He was there for 3 years. It's possible that some of that time he was in prison. His letter to the Corinthians, second letter, makes references to a lot of hardships, and it could have been during that time. Okay. What about the travel issue? Well, the journey from Ephesus to Philippi is less than 400 miles. It's half the distance of the other ones. And the journey from Ephesus to Colossae is only about 175 miles. Very short trip. Either journey would have taken less than a week. Okay? Now, one's sort of oversea and a little bit of a land hike, and the other's just a hike down the road. So it's very possible. But there's a really significant problem, which one would hope that you've already caught. Why would you write a letter to the city that you're in? Timothy was with Paul in Ephesus, but why would you write an epistle to the city you're in? And Timothy's not a co-author of Ephesians. Okay? So, yeah, Timothy was with Paul in Ephesus, but he's not a co-author. Okay? So what do we do with that? All right, so let's look at some possible conclusions. At some point during the three-year stay in Ephesus, Paul, along with Timothy, was imprisoned and wrote the epistles to the Philippians, to the Colossians, and to Philemon. And that would make the date of these epistles roughly 56 AD. Okay? But what about Ephesians? Well, what if at a later date, during his Roman imprisonment, he sent Tychicus, remember, it says, I'm sending Tychicus to Ephesus in 2 Timothy 4:12 with the epistle to the Ephesians. Okay? There's nothing that says all of them were written at the same time. And remember that the Ephesians letter is very different than the others. This could explain why Timothy is not a co-author and there are no familiar references to what's going on in Ephesus in the Ephesians letter. Okay? So remember that when we read the Ephesians epistle, there's no, hey, remember that these ladies and these ladies aren't getting along. There's no give thanks to so-and-so because he was such a good buddy of mine. There's none of that. Well, if he was 900 miles away, back and forth correspondence would have been very difficult. It would have been like a month either way. So maybe, possibly, he wrote this letter, gave it to Tychicus, and said, when you get to Ephesus, have the elders read it, and then have them pass it around to the various different cities that are in the Ephesian area. Okay? That is a reasonable possibility. That would make the Epistle to the Ephesians written from Rome between 61 and 63 during Paul's arrest there. All right, now, here's just some interesting fun facts. Okay? Typically speaking, St. Timothy is venerated as the first bishop of Ephesus. There's some good passages that talk about, Paul telling Timothy to remember the gifts that were given to him and don't let anyone despise his youth because he's a young man and to lead the congregation there. And it may very well be that he left him in Asia, just like he left Silas/Silvanus in Corinth, and said, you've been with me all this time, now stay here and keep these guys in line. Peace out. And then he carried on, which is why he's not with them in Caesarea, which is why he's not with them in Rome, okay? Which is why he writes these epistles to him later on, because they've been separated. The other interesting thing is that in the epistle to the Ephesians of Ignatius of Antioch, who died about 107 AD, he's what we call one of the first apostolic fathers. He's the next generation of church leaders after all of the apostles are dead. He's the very first generation of Christian writers after the Bible is sort of done with the epistles. He wrote a letter to the Ephesians that wrote of Onesimus, your bishop. Very interesting. Is it definitive that this was the same guy that we read about in Colossians and Philemon? No. Could it be? Yeah, absolutely it could be. Is it just an intriguing possibility that after having escaped from slavery, made it to Paul, being sent back to Philemon, and then receiving liberty at the hand of his former slave master, that he went back to Ephesus and after the death of Timothy became the next bishop and was there when Ignatius of Antioch passed through on his way to Rome to his own martyrdom? Wow, that's just, it's an intriguing possibility. Okay? But the really fascinating thing is that in 60 AD, Colossae was completely destroyed. It was destroyed by an earthquake. Okay? They don't talk about the first bishop of Colossae or the historic churches in Colossae or anything like that, because Colossae was destroyed. And incidentally, the idea that he may have written it from Rome is also really hard to buy, because his Roman imprisonment was most likely 61 to 63, and then right around 60, Colossae was destroyed, leveled. The Lycus Valley happened to be on a fault line. There was a big temple of Apollo on there, much like the temple of Delphi in Greece. And the priest of Apollo would put people over this, and they'd inhale the fumes that came up from it, and they would have these like delusional seizures, and they would interpret this as prophetic oracles. And at a certain point in time, the faults moved, and the earthquake was so dramatic, it destroyed the city. Now, Laodicea and Hierapolis were not destroyed, but Colossae was just devastated. So it adds a completely different dimension to your reading of Colossians to realize that probably 4 years after these people received this letter, whole city destroyed, everybody in it dead. Fascinating. Which is also, by the way, at least one reason why when you read the book of Revelation, all of these other cities that are mentioned, Colossae doesn't get a letter. Because by the time that John was in exile on Patmos, probably 96 AD, there was no Colossae. It had been destroyed. Okay? So, if you read Colossians, think about the fact that these people got this letter, 4 years to live. No idea. Fascinating. Okay? So, the other interesting thing is that today is the day in which we observe the Feast of St. Luke, who was with Paul through so many of his journeys and probably with him on his journey to Caesarea and back to Rome, and conveyed so much of what we know that gave us the sort of spine which we attach all these other puzzle pieces to that helps us understand what Paul did and all of the ministry that he did and so much of what he accomplished. So it is just a profound thing to think about what we have through the gospel, what we have through Acts, all of the work that we have through this evangelist. So let's pray.